Tea and Jeopardy with Emma Newman. There's always time for a nice cup of tea and a spot of mild peril. Well, hello there, my lovelies. I do hope you're well and haven't been suffering from a mass delusion that summer has arrived in the British Isles. My name is Emma Newman, and I'd like to welcome you into my secret tea lair for a gentle half hour of polite conversation, abject geekery, a cheeky bit of cake, and of course, a nice cup of tea. This week, I'm delighted to welcome you into a very special location for the tea lair, a rather unusual throne room that belongs to a friend of mine. There are plenty of places to sit. As you can see, he's used to entertaining large numbers of guests, hence the tiered stone seating. Latimer has been kind enough to put a large floral arrangement in the pit at the centre, which hopefully masks the smell. I do apologise about that. Poor Latimer spent all morning sweeping the room, but there is still something of the goblin in the air. If you look through the round window over there, you'll see a rather impressive labyrinth, and a few poor souls wandering around it now. Of course, they don't know that one only has to walk around the outside and climb up the hill to the castle. I recommend avoiding going up the stone steps over there. They lead further into the castle, and there are upside-down staircases and all manner of confusing doorways and routes that can unsettle the stomach.
I'm sorry to disturb you, ma'am, but your guest has arrived. Ms. Karina Freyn von Cooper.
Ah, marvellous. Let's see her calling card.
Take care, ma'am. The diamond-encrusted edge is rather sharp.
So it is. Karina Freyn von Cooper. I write things you want to read. Show her in, Latimer.
Yes, ma'am.
For those of you who don't know, Karina Cooper writes steampunk, paranormal romances, and urban fantasy. Her novel Tarnished won the RT Reviewer's Choice Award for Best Steampunk Novel of 2012.
Ms. Freyn von Cooper, ma'am.
Hello, Karina. Do come and sit down. How are you?
Through dangers untold and hardships unnumbered, I have found my way here to the castle beyond the Goblin City to take tea. For my will is as strong as yours. My kingdom is great. You know, I can never remember that line.
Through dangers untold. You battled through the labyrinth to come to tea. Oh, I am sorry. Did Latimer not include details of the easy route in the invitation?
No, I can't say I saw any.
Oh, I'm dreadfully sorry. You must be in need of a restorative cup of tea. Would you care for some?
I would love some, thank you.
I'll pour. And how do you take your tea?
With milk and sugar.
Fabulous. I will leave it to you to choose your sugar lumps, and we've brought the sugar lumps with us, so you can be assured that they are as they appear to be.
Oh, thank you.
Would you like a slice of saffron cake?
I have never had saffron cake. That sounds delicious.
Ah, well, it's a Cornish delicacy from the southwest of England, where I was born. It's a very rich kind of sponge with currants, and it has the saffron spice in it as well. It's quite a subtle flavour, but very pleasant.
It smells delicious.
And the Cornish fashion is to have some clotted cream with it as well, just to make sure that your arteries are truly threatened.
Oh.
Would you care for some clotted cream as well?
Yes, please.
Fabulous. So, before we go any further, I'd like to ask you about the diamond edge of this calling card. It's rather sharp. Do you use these for anything else?
Well, a lady can never be too careful, especially when she wanders around dark streets looking for adventures, vagrants, things of that nature. So they have a nice little edge that I can use in matters of self-defense, of course.
Oh, of course, of course. Oh, I think that's rather sensible. Though one has to take care when taking them out of one's wallet.
Yes, yes, I've gone through quite a few fingers wallets.
And I was interested to see Karina Freyn von Cooper. I had no idea you were of European descent.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, I'm first-generation American. Both sides of my family come from Germany.
Ah, I did not know that.
It's one of my small claims to what little fame I can.
Now, in my invitation, I asked you to bring a curio with you. What have you decided to bring today?
I have brought a troll.
Oh my goodness, he really is a troll.
He really is a troll. He is quite an ugly troll, and yet so ugly that he's endearingly cute, with his very, very long nose and jagged teeth and pot belly.
Oh, goodness me. For those who are sitting up at the back, they may not be able to see him very clearly. How tall is this little troll?
This guy is possibly 6 inches, 8 inches.
You know, he has something of the goblin about him.
He does, which is why I thought he would make an ideal guest. His name is Mark France, named after a young fellow that I had a terrible crush in my freshman year of high school. And this was my way of spending time with Mark France.
You turned him into a miniature troll.
And the unfortunate part was this gentleman was an amazing actor. He was among the theater crowd, and he had quite a prominent nose. And this troll has quite the prominent nose.
He does. He has a rather magnificent nose, actually.
Yes, very, very, almost de Bergerac.
Yes. But, you know, I was rather shocked when I saw you bring this troll out of your bag, because my father, when I was growing up, had a troll very similar to this one, and everybody commented on how ugly he was, but we were very fond of him for that very reason.
Exactly.
He got his from Norway. Is yours from Norway as well?
Yes. He was a gift from my mother. I don't remember exactly where she got it, but he is a kniform troll, I believe is what they call it.
Wonderful. I have no idea if my father still has that troll. He's probably lurking beneath something. So I understand that you write romance and steampunk novels, often the two together, and that there are some scenes of a carnal nature. Is that true?
It is partially true. I do write romance, which tends to cross over with urban fantasy, and I also write these steampunk novels, the St. Croix Chronicles, and they have elements of romance in them, but they are not specifically romance of a genre. The first one, Tarnished, does have a certain delicate scene in it. One that does not exactly go all the way, if I may.
You may indeed. Oh, I'm sorry. We're talking about the date. Sorry, I'm sorry.
Oh, when you meet Hawk, you will know. The second one, however, is quite chaste. And the third one is absolutely not chaste.
Ah, I see. Well, in old films, and I have a passion for old films, the camera pans away across the room after the passionate kiss, and nowadays we see everything. Do you prefer to pan away, or do you like to zoom in?
How can I answer this that does not sound totally filthy?
Well, really, don't worry. This is the throne room of the Goblin King, and I'm sure that things of a filthy nature happen here daily.
And where is Jareth, if I may?
Oh, do you know him?
I know of him, and I would certainly like to know him.
He does have that effect on people. Yes. I believe he had some business with a baby somewhere or other. He said he'd be back.
Naturally. Always the babies, that one.
Yes, he's a busy chap.
Well, to answer your question, especially since I'm not being watched by him, I have a certain fondness for what I call boot scenes, which is if you've ever watched the original Star Trek with Captain Kirk, he would often meet a lovely lady of either alien or otherwise descent, and they would kiss passionately. And the next scene we saw was him putting on his boots. So I call it a boot scene. And I do have a certain fondness for that, but I don't shy away from zooming in my books.
Mm.
I believe that such matters are a part of life, and oftentimes, how one feels during such things is just as important to the story and character development as how one feels before and after.
Mm, fair enough. Do you ever worry about, I don't know, how should I put this? I have what I can now call a boot scene. I had no idea that it could be summed up so eloquently, but I have a boot scene in the second Slitworld novel.
Ooh, I haven't gotten that far yet.
Which I'm not going to say anything more about whatsoever. But I've never written a zooming in scene, shall we say. And I think one of the main reasons is because I am so afraid of writing it very, very badly. Is there anything that you find, you know, that you worry about with those things? Or do you read lots in the genre and you get confident because of that?
Yes, that actually, well, I don't know that confident is ever necessarily the word for it. I don't know if I can go out there and say I'm quite confident about the sex I write. But reading a lot in the genre does help, because there are so many really well-crafted scenes. And there are just as many really poorly crafted scenes, and you get a sense for what works for you and what you find jarring and what you don't want to use and what you do want to use. And I've been reading romance since I was 12 or 13. Mm-hmm. So I've had a lot of exposure.
Oh, so this is my mistake. I was reading Asimov, and that there was nothing there. I never read any, but I missed out the romance element of my education.
Oh, I was too. I ended up devouring everything on shelves. Reading was kind of my escape from a bullying history and all kinds of things. And so I just devoured everything. And when I ran out of things to read, I kind of found romance. And lo and behold, the subgenres in romance really kind of filled that niche. And now when I write, I still get kind of blushy about writing scenes. And so I will just write them. I don't necessarily think about it. I just put on my music and I just let it go. And then I don't touch it until the whole book is done and I'm going through revisions. So it does take a certain amount of practice. But I also think that there's something very, I don't want to say cathartic, because I think that's the wrong word. But being able to craft a sex scene that is just as powerful as a fight scene or a declaration of love scene, there's something to be said about that.
Perhaps I will have to do some research.
Not that I'm encouraging you one way or another, but I think you should.
It sounds like a lot of fun.
It can be, yeah.
There's something else that, I mean, we've been friends on Twitter for some time now, and I have been very open about the fact that I have one of these online crushes on you. And I think one of the reasons, one of the many reasons, is that you're into steampunk.
Yes.
And I love steampunk. And I was wondering what attracts you to that most splendid subculture.
Well, I am, in a lot of ways, people would call me a shallow steampunk, because I really am attracted to the aesthetics of it. I love the appearance of it, the clothing, the jewelry, the accessories, the look. Even if it's not pretty, even if it's dirty and gritty and up to your elbows in airship engine grease, you know, there's something about the appearance that really, really draws me. My husband is into, you know, the man candy, as I call him, is really into the crafting and the making and the how it works and what it does. So it's an interesting dichotomy in my house. So there's just something about steampunk in general, the magicalness of it, but also the mechanics of it, the fact that it can be magic and mechanical.
Mm.
I just love dichotomies like that.
Mm, absolutely. Yes, I'm very much a shallow steampunk as well, I have to say. Though I do like the manners aspect of it.
Yes. Yes.
So, I mean, obviously, whenever people are talking about steampunk these days, it seems to be, you know, within a wider context of, oh, but doesn't that hark back to a time where there were lots of terrible things happening and, you know, rampant misogyny and all this kind of stuff? And one of the things that I like about steampunk is that we can take the best bits and play. And that we should be allowed to do that, because
I agree.
Playfulness is an important thing, as well as remembering how utterly appalling, mm-hmm. you know, particularly the British were at the time, and still are in many ways. Yeah.
Well, sure. Well, I don't think the Brits are necessarily alone in that. There's, just looking now, I mean, there's still a lot of sexism issues in the world. And when I wrote the Cherry books, the St. Croix Chronicles, I had a choice. I could either write a series where I kind of created my own world. You know, there aren't sexism issues in the world. There are no, you know, slavery issues or racial issues or immigrant issues or all those things that really kind of was part and parcel of the Victorian world. Or I could try and stay as close to that as possible and showcase the fighting against that, the opposing mm-hmm. Characters and so on. And I chose to do the latter. So every so often I get comments about how subtly racist the main heroine can be and how little things like mild surprise when a person of color can read. You know, things like that where now it's not acceptable, but of the time it was. But I also, right beside that, show how she's overcoming these deep-seated, I guess in a way, trained to think this way.
Mm.
And so I chose to do that because it seemed like if I was going to put the punk in something, if I was, you know, the punk aspect of steampunk, I wanted it to be in this heroine starting in the status quo and shaking it up.
Mm.
And showing that, you know, she can be friends with all of these different people and she can fight her own prejudices and be a part of her own prejudices, but also overcome.
Interesting stuff.
Sorry.
It's so serious. Goodness, I'm just going to add a little bit more sugar in my tea and and ask you a very serious question now.
I am prepared.
Who would you most like to see coming towards you holding two cocktails and wearing nothing more than a winning smile?
Oh, my goodness. So many options. I must say, since given our location and the empty throne over there, I believe that Jareth the Goblin King would be an ideal candidate for this.
Oh, really? But he has such marvelous clothing.
He does, and yet he has such amazing bearing, like this demeanor that he has. I think if you stripped him naked, all eyes would still go to him. Well, for obvious reasons. Just his charisma is so powerful. I think two cocktails and him and we'd be good.
Not Pierce Brosnan? Not that I've been stalking you on Twitter lately.
I do enjoy Pierce Brosnan, don't get me wrong. Craig Daniel. Why do I always do that? Daniel Craig? I can't keep his name straight. Generally, the two latest Bond boys, absolutely. My candidacy list is enormous. You know, there are girls on that list. Olivia Wilde. I would have no problems with that.
Olivia Wilde, who's... I'm not very good with names.
She is... did you happen to watch Cowboys and Aliens?
Oh, I did, when it came out at the cinema.
She was the woman with the amazing eyes.
I can't remember because Harrison Ford was in it.
Yes.
I'm sorry.
Harrison Ford and Daniel Craig and Olivia Wilde was the woman.
Oh, there were other people in the film.
Were in fact, yes. How did you miss Daniel Craig?
Well, he was the one who was, you know, in shot when Harrison Ford wasn't, so I would kind of like have some popcorn. I mean, even though he was getting on a bit in that film, he still got it for me.
I will never not love Harrison Ford, and it all stems back to watching Star Wars as a child,
mm-hmm.
and then watching it again as an adult and realizing how saucy it really got.
Yeah.
Most notably, the lines, getting held by you is hardly enough to get me excited. And he says, well, sorry, princess, we don't have time for anything else. And as an adult going, ooh!
I know, isn't it amazing?
amazing how much just flies over our heads as children.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, obviously, I grew up watching Star Wars and obviously loved Han Solo because Han Solo. But it was Indiana Jones for me. He was the first man I well and truly crushed on, and I had posters of Indiana Jones all over my room in the way that only a kind of, you know, 13-year-old can.
Certainly.
Yeah.
Certainly. No judgment here.
Anyway, there's been a lot of talk about a female Doctor Who lately. What do you think about a female Bond?
I tend to really enjoy canon. I think that having a female Bond would not be my ideal. However, I think having a female 007 would be amazing.
Mm.
So the difference between, you know, turning James Bond into Jamie Bond or retiring Bond, hopefully not with a bullet, and having a woman take over the 007 designation would be, I think, wonderful. I would love to see that.
Mm. Do you think it's likely to happen?
I think, given the world and marketing, how marketing basically works, I think the only time it's likely to happen would be a spin-off, and it wouldn't be 007, it would be another 00 category.
Mm.
002, we've seen 002 in movies before, you know, that sort of thing.
Yes, I think it would be one of those situations as well where perhaps they would have to write the character as a male character would be written without falling into the traps of doing what Hollywood usually does with strong female characters.
Mm-hmm. Obviously, we feel very strongly about this.
What I was going to say was that I heard, I don't know if it's true, but I heard that Ripley was originally written as a male character and then they decided to cast her as female. I don't know if that's right.
I don't know if that's right either. I mean, you can look at that and say it would make sense, but a part of me really wants to believe that Ripley was written as Ripley as a woman because it was such a strong step.
Mm, me too. I really would like to believe that, but
yeah,
I don't know if it's, I haven't seen much evidence of that going on. I mean, obviously everyone is kind of pinning their hopes on Joss Whedon, but it seems a shame that there's like one person we keep looking to in Hollywood to write a bearable female character for the masses.
Yes. Yes. You know, I really enjoyed how he treated Black Widow in the Avengers movie. I was building a head full of steam when she, have you seen it?
Oh, have I?
Okay, good.
Have I seen it several times?
My apologies.
Drink.
Meant no offense. When she first went to talk to Loki and they pulled out that love. And I love love, you know, as a romance author and as a lover of love, I think it's great. But to suddenly have them fall back on, you know, oh, love, I was building this head of steam. And then when she pulled that trick on him, I was out of my chair, totally shrieking with joy. I'm like, that is a strong woman. That's what we need.
Yeah. And I also like the opening shot with her where she's like, you know, I'm working. About to tell me everything, and that the initial shot, you see the woman in the traditional tied to a chair in the position of peril.
Yes.
Kind of flip on its head. But then saying that, you know, I love that, and I do genuinely love it, but I would also like to see some strong female characters where they don't have to physically kick ass as well, where they can just be kind of tough.
Smart.
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, I think we're a way off from that. You know, sometimes I think things are going backwards at the moment. But it's nice to see a kind of resurgent feminism through social media.
I really feel like, don't lose hope. It gets kind of like Sisyphus, you know, pushing the boulder up. But I really think the internet just made everything seem like it's happening more often. You know, and it gives a voice to all these terrible people when they didn't have a platform. And I think that's kind of what we're seeing now is finally they have a platform and they're exercising it. And I think we just got to keep doing what we do.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Yeah. So as I want to do when I have guests, I asked on the Twitters if there was anything that anyone wanted to ask, and that Stephen Blackmore said he had a question that might lead to a criminal investigation. Is there anything you'd like to confess?
There are a lot of things that I could confess and don't want to, but in regards to Mr. Blackmore, do you know he is incorrigible, he is reprehensible, and he is other things that are multiple syllables?
But he is a lovely chap as well.
He really is, yes. In fact, the whole Angry Robot crew, well, at least the core that I know you now, which, by the way, I have been reverse stalking you for a very long time. I just have to say, and Stephen Blackmore, Chuck Wendig, I mean, just delightful, delightful people. Chris Holm now, I think he's an Angry Robot author.
No, I think Chris Holm is. I don't think Stephen Blackmore is, but he hangs out with Chuck.
Wait, isn't he? Who put out?
Is it Door? Was it Door? I don't know. Oh, Stephen, forgive us. If you're listening.
I guess it's very telling that I just assume that he's in with the amazing crowd at Angry Robot. Shows what I know.
I think Angry Robot they've got a great group of authors. We went bowling when we went to Worldcon, and bowling with Chuck Wendig, that is an experience.
Oh, I am so jealous right now.
He's, you know how Chuck kind of talks and blogs? He's exactly the same the way he bowls. He's just like, I was still learning how to do it, and he said, "Look, I'll show you how to do it." I won't even attempt his wonderful accent, but he said, I'll show you how to do it. You just pick up this ball, you just go up there, and you just love it as hard at the thing at the bottom as you can. Just do it, yes, knock him out." And then he threw this cannonball, this bowling ball, so high into the air that when it landed, I thought it cracked the wood.
Oh.
And he's like, not like that. And then he was such a funny guy, but so lovely.
Oh, Stephen Blackmore's with Penguin, of course. He and I just need to join the fold. That's what this is all about.
Absolutely. Mm. Well, it's a kind of wider social fold, I think.
It is. And I have to say, I really enjoy what Angry Robot is doing with the books that they're putting out and your covers. Oh.
I know. I'm so lucky.
Mm. Blessed by the cover goblin?
I would say fairies, but not fairies in my world. No, nothing good comes of them.
No.
Yes, I'm very lucky. Sarah Coleman is extraordinarily talented.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I understand that you have a novella that's soon to come out. Is that right?
I do. It's coming out, I believe, August 5th.
And does this involve some kind of steampunk Boba Fett, or have I misunderstood that?
No, you are absolutely correct. The novella is titled The Mysterious Case of Mr. Strangeway. It is a novella of the St. Croix Chronicles, and it is kind of a glimpse into Cherry's past. It's her first collection ever, wherein she is after, she's a collector, a bounty hunter, if you will, and her first collection is a gentleman whose debts have finally come due. And unfortunately, while she is attempting to collect this rather dashing, we'll call him gentleman, she is stymied at every turn by a rival collector in a suit of armor rather reminiscent of Boba Fett.
Ah.
Now, steampunk Boba Fett is a real-life celebrity in the steampunk community. If you Google him, steampunk Boba Fett, you will find him everywhere, and he is a very dear friend of mine. And so I wrote this novella in honor of him. And Captain Anthony LaGrange, who is also a real person and featured in the novella. And we're working on it together in terms of promotion and talking about it and that sort of thing. And half of everything I make from this novella is going to his favorite charity, the Make-A-Wish Foundation.
Oh, fantastic. Oh, that's such a great charity.
I'm really excited. I love doing charity novellas. I get such a kick out of it, you know, being often a poor, starving author. It's kind of my way of giving. Mm-hmm. And I love that John, Steampunk Boba Fett, is on board with this, because it just makes me happy.
Excellent. I will look out for that.
Thank you.
I'll just check the teapot. Yes, the teapot's almost empty and the saffron cake is almost gone, and I'm afraid it's time to leave.
Oh, so sad.
But I'll tell Jareth you were here and pass on your details.
Yes, please. And while I have no inclinations of having children, I will borrow someone's child if he'd like to visit.
Oh, well, he does that frequently himself. I'm sure you'll get along famously. Latimer has arranged a hot air balloon for you so that you can fly over the labyrinth instead of having to endure those trials again.
Oh, Latimer, you're a peach. Thank you so much.
It's been such a delight to have you here, Karina, and it's so, so lovely to speak to you in person.
Thank you. I have to say I'm utterly enamored of your voice. Can I say that? Is that okay?
That's fine. It's a little embarrassing, and I would hate for all of the people sitting here listening to think, oh my goodness, they're just stroking each other's egos over there.
You may stroke my ego anytime you like. Authors are fragile things.
Oh, we are, aren't we? We're so desperately neurotic, it's terrible. But yes, I'm sure that Latimer will show you the way out. Now, do take care.
I will definitely do my best, and you have a wonderful everything.
Oh, I will. He'll be back soon.
Okay. Goodbye.
Bye. What a wonderful guest, wouldn't you say, Latimer?
Yes, Mum. She reminds me of the babe.
What babe?
The babe with the power.
What power?
The power of voodoo.
What on earth are you talking about, Latimer? Have you been at the absence again? She is a babe, though. I have to confess, I've had a lady crush on her for some time.
Lady crush, Mum?
Never mind. Now, would you be so kind as to see whether Jareth is on his way back?
Yes, Mum.
Well, the balloon looks so splendid, floating high above the Goblin City. I should imagine everything looks normal from up there. Oh! Oh no! The balloon's been hit! And Jareth promised no harm would come to my guest. Latimer? Latimer?
Oh, I can fix this.
Yes, Mum?
Where were you? Look, a goblin has fired at the balloon. It has a puncture. She'll land in the middle of the labyrinth.
Yes, a goblin. What a terrible misfortune. Tea, Mum?
Glue, no, sewing kit. I don't sew.
She's trying to patch the hole. She's fearless. She's climbing on the rigging to where the hole is.
She'll be a prisoner of the labyrinth for sure.
It's as if Jareth planned it all along.
Oh, that's right.
There's only one way out of this, but so few mortals know the magic words to...
You have no power over me.
Oh.
She disappeared. Just in time. She really is rather fabulous.
You did ask me to warn you about gushing, Mum.
Only about China Mieville. And I will have that cup of tea now. I'm sure the Goblin King will be here any moment, and I don't want to be thirsty.
Very good, Mum.
Well, whilst I'm waiting for Jareth to return, I'd like to thank you for joining the splendid Karina Cooper and I today. The next time we take tea together, we'll be joined by Gareth L. Powell, author of The Recollection and Akak Macaque. Last time we spoke, I asked for advice on behalf of a friend of mine who had the misfortune of being hunted by a time-travelling cyborg. Mr. Reed suggested I contact a Captain Harkness to deal with the problem. However, I don't have her phone number. Instead, I'd like to raise my teacup in respect to Paul, who suggested luring the cyborg into the magic roundabout in Swindon to confuse it enough to give the authorities time to intervene with extreme prejudice. Having had the misfortune of experiencing that roundabout myself, mere weeks after passing my driving test, I can see the wisdom in the advice, and will let my friend know as soon as I get back home. Speaking of which, I'm thinking of sending a thank you present to the Goblin King in return for letting me use his throne room as a tea lair, but I haven't the faintest idea of what to send him. Dear listeners, do you have any gift suggestions? What does one send to the man who can magic up anything?
Oh, and please don't suggest babies. I think he can handle that himself. All suggestions are welcome, particularly the outlandish and comedic. Do be dears, and leave your answers at www.tandjeopardy.com. I'll pick the best one and share it with you the next time we take tea. Latimer, you'll need to find a new tea lair for us. We can't impose upon the Goblin King again. Find one that's suitable, would you? Perhaps something a little less fantastical.
Very good, Mum.
You've just listened to an episode of Tea and Jeopardy, hosted by Emma Newman on the Geek Planet Online Network. Go to www.tandjeopardy.com to find out more and join in.